super pumped to have my friend Chris Widener on the show. He's a motivational speaker. He's among the list of the top 50 speakers in the world. He's Inc. Magazine's top 100 leadership speakers, New York Times bestselling author, Wall Street Journal bestselling author. What else can this guy do? He does it all. He's an amazing guy. He has an amazing message. Stay tuned on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited for this episode. But first, special thanks to all those brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Very difficult environment. You have much support. Keep doing the fantastic job you're doing. I am super pumped. You know how excited I get when I talk about Four Sigmatic. I love coffee. I know most of you do. You're going to love their products. Head over to cjevolution.com. Click the link to Four Sigmatic. You're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. Very pumped to be partnered with Detect-A-Chem. This amazing company is protecting our brave men and women in uniform. We had Greg Gentini of Detect-A-Chem on the show a couple weeks back, an amazing guy doing great things with this just amazing company. Mobile threat detection, folks, is now available for our first responders in the palm of their hands. Specifically, it can detect explosives and the crappy drugs, fentanyl, and all kinds of other crap that is out there. Head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see a link to Detect-A-Chem, see what they can do for your organization. Folks, we all hit those ruts in life, those downs that we experience as we, again, traverse this thing called life. Some of it's professional, some of it's personal. But this is where my good friend Kim Ades and her amazing team at Frame of Mind Coaching can help. If you head over to cjevolution.com, click the link, you're able to take a free assessment right now. And Kim Ades is an amazing woman. She has an amazing company, and they are helping people all over the planet. So again, if you are facing some tough times, head over to cjevolution.com, see the link to Frame of Mind Coaching, and see what Kim Ades and her amazing team can do for you. On to the show. Chris Widener's on the show. Hello, Chris.
How are you? I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, I appreciate you being here, sir. You're all the way down in Arizona, which I will be there in a couple days.
Yeah, beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yeah. You said the weather is getting a little cruddy today, right?
It's actually, if you're coming down in a few days, you may be the perfect golfing weather because it's overcast. You're not going to get that sun beaten down on you.
Oh, that's so good. I remember it's warm.
It's 80. I mean, it's 80. It's just not 180. So that's good.
Well, in Colorado, it's like 42 degrees here. So anything's better than...
It's an upgrade.
Yeah. Now, for people who don't know who you are, Chris, can you give a little bit about yourself?
Sure. And I'll tell you a funny story. You know, Jim Rohn, the legendary Jim Rohn, he and I spent the last 7 years of his life working together. And Jim used to do this thing where he would say from stage, "How many of you have never heard of me before? Raise your hand." And nobody would raise their hand because by the time I was working with him, he was one of the most famous speakers around. Yeah. So I finally said to him, I said, "Jim, you can't do that anymore. I'm stealing that from you because when I say it, people actually raise their hand." And so oftentimes I'll get this, you know, this introduction, you know, this Chris is a world-class speaker, motivational speakers, Hall of Fame, top 50 speaker in the world, blah, blah, blah. And I come out and I go, "Okay, after that, how many of you have never heard of me before?" And a lot of hands will go up. And then I'll say what Jim used to say, which is, "I thought I was more famous than that." And people kind of chuckle, you know, because at least you show some self-deprecating humor and, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm an author. I'm a speaker. I've been named one of the top 50 speakers in the world, one of Inc. Magazine's top 100 leadership speakers, motivational speaker Hall of Fame, 20 some books. If you include ebooks, it's 20, 21, something like that. About 100 audio programs, spoken all over the world. I think I've done 2,500 speeches all over the world, as small as 10 people and as large as 25,000. So that's kind of what I've been doing for the last 31 years, is traveling around talking to people about leadership and success and motivation and influence and how they can make their lives better.
Is that it, Chris? Is that all you've been doing?
Other than that, I'm not up to much.
Now, about your background, you have kind of a troubled background growing up. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I was born into a pretty wealthy family. I wouldn't say wealthy. we were making a lot of money, big difference. My dad died in 1970 and he was 41 years old.
Wow.
And he was making 90,000 bucks a year in 1970.
Oh my God,
the last year he was that he filed income tax, 1969, he made $90,000. He was the fifth partner at an architecture firm called NBB&J. Anybody in architecture knows exactly who they are. They just did either the Google headquarters or the Facebook headquarters. Can't remember which. Offices all over the world. Name a major city and they're there. But this was back when they had maybe 150 architects. He was the CFO. And interestingly enough, he was the CFO of an architecture firm with 150 architects. And he did all of the money management with a slide rule and an abacus.
Oh my God.
It makes you realize, you know, we just take for granted computers and calculators and, you know, you can actually say to your phone now, you know, Google, what is 422 times 78? And it just reads it back to you. He was doing it with a slide rule and an abacus. He got cancer. I was four. We were living in Sandpoint Country Club in the biggest house overlooking the golf course and Lake Washington and the Cascade Mountain Range. Even though he's making a lot of money, he only had $30,000, you know, saved up in life insurance. Not much. My mom had to sell the house because she couldn't afford the outrageous mortgage payment of $400 a month.
Wow.
And that began a downward spiral. Long story short, 28 homes, 11 different schools, shipped off to live with relatives twice, once in the fourth grade, once in the ninth grade, and started drugs in the sixth grade. Made most of my money growing up betting the horses at Long Acres Horse Track. You know, you get the point here.
Yeah.
I was going nowhere fast, mostly because I had no male role models in my life. My dad, of course, died. One grandpa ran off and I met him like one time. The other grandpa died when I was young from emphysema. And my brother was 13 years older than me. So when my dad died, he was moving off to college and he married a woman who hated my mom. So we never saw him much. Jeez. Until later on in life. So I didn't have a whole lot of male role models to kick me in the butt and keep me in line. And so I kind of went astray for a long time in my life.
So what was the catalyst, Chris? What was the, you know, the thing that changed in your life where you said, hey, I got to get my, you know what together and kind of change my mindset.
I was spending the night at my best friend's house. He was my big pot smoking buddy. And his name was Danny Carpenter. Danny and Mike Carpenter, their dad was a vice cop for King County Police. And their mom was little Janie Carpenter. And it was a Saturday night. We probably got high. We went to bed and the next morning, little Janie, she couldn't have been 5 foot tall. She came in, burst the door open. She said, get up. We're going to Sunday school. And I literally, Patrick, I had no idea what Sunday school was. Like it was, okay, you could have said, we're going to blah, 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 and just in French. I had no idea what it was. But I tried everything else. I was willing to try Sunday school. So she hauled me off to a little Lutheran church called Mount Si Lutheran Church at the corner of 8th and Ogle in a little town called North Bend, Washington. And North Bend is the town where they filmed the old TV show Twin Peaks. And if you remember Twin Peaks, they had the little cafe that served cherry pie.
Sure.
That was the Marti Cafe. And so I grew up, my high school years and a couple times we lived out there in this little logging town, quirky, weird logging town, much like the town Twin Peaks. In fact, when you watch the intro to Twin Peaks and you see the sign that says welcome to Twin Peaks, there's a mountain that the road is going out to, and the mountain is called Mount Si, which I went to Mount Si High School, and the road is called the Reinig Road, and that was the road that I drove to school every single day. So I lived out in this little quirky town. They took me to Mount Si Lutheran Church, and there was a youth minister there who was a good old boy from Montana, Sam Samuelson. And he basically kicked me in the butt and he taught me two things. Number one, I have a bigger purpose to my life. I'd never really heard about God or, you know, any sort of grand plan or, you know, any sort of purpose or anything like that. So that was a whole new concept to me, that there might be a bigger purpose than, you know, just you know, eat, drink, and be merry. Mm-hmm. The second thing was Sam, as I mentioned, was a good old boy from Montana, and he was able to kick me in the butt. And so he fulfilled a couple of things. Number one, taught me about God and purpose and big plan for my life. And then also was a male role model for me. And that's what really turned me around and got me going. So I graduated, I think we had 179 people in our class, 172. I was like 149th. I was, as Zig Ziglar says, in the half of the class that made the top half possible. I eked my way out of college, out of high school. I got into a college where the only requirement to get into the college was that the check cleared for tuition. Oh, and so I got into college. I got a degree in youth and family work because I was going to go and help kids, at-risk troubled kids. And that lasted about 3 years because I realized I don't like teenagers. And yet at the same time, I was traveling, doing speaking engagements to high school summer camps, colleges, youth groups, those kinds of things. And that was the beginning of my speaking career. So that's sort of the transition. All that happened between 16 and 22. So in those 5 years, I went from pot smoking troublemaker who got 47 written referrals in his 10th grade year to traveling and speaking to high schoolers and summer camps about how to get your act together.
And isn't it amazing how life changes? You know,
yeah, so in 5 years.
In 5 years, and so quickly. Now, you have so many keynotes out there, Chris, but I want to talk a little bit about leadership and influence.
Sure.
You know, what I personally think that, and this is just my opinion, that there's a leadership void out there. I mean, what do you think about that? I think that a lot of people say that they're leaders and they you know, they talk to talk, but they don't walk the walk.
Yeah, and there's a difference between positional leadership mm-hmm. and actual leadership, and ethical leadership. So the first is that people that have a title of leadership, but they aren't leaders. And you know, my start when my career really began to climb is when I began ghostwriting for John Maxwell, and wrote his nationally syndicated column for about a year and a half. And John always says, leadership is influence. So mm-hmm. you're not influencing somebody. You really aren't a leader. And so the first one is you can have a position of leadership, senior vice president of whatever, but if nobody listens to you or you don't move people, or I define leadership or influence as the ability to change another person's thoughts, beliefs, and actions. If you can't do that, you're really not a leader, no matter what your title says, no matter what your position is. So that's the first delineation. Positional leadership versus actual leadership. Then you get into actual leadership versus, you know, you get ethical leadership versus unethical leadership. People like Hitler and Stalin and, you know, Mao Zedong, they were leaders. Because remember, the definition is the ability to change other people's thoughts, beliefs, mm-hmm. or actions. And yet they were not good leaders. They were not ethical leaders. They were not moral leaders, right? And so leadership is in and of itself neither moral nor immoral. It's basically amoral. Leadership is the ability to change other people's thoughts, beliefs, and actions, right? Then you have good leadership, which is done, you know, where you motivate people, where people want to follow you toward a good end, versus unethical or evil leadership, which is based out of force or coercion towards a negative end for the group or people. So so the first delineation is people who think they have power and leadership and influence but don't, and then people who do, whether it's used ethically and morally versus unethically and immorally.
Now, you talk to all kinds of people, Chris. I mean, you go into organizations, you help train. What are the big problems you're seeing, or what are the problems when it comes to leadership and influence that people are telling you that they're struggling with, maybe personally or they're within their organization?
I think there's two things. The first is one that I'm not as much of an expert in, but I see it, and that is generational differences mm-hmm. and perspectives. You know, one of the things that's interesting now is older baby boomers trying to lead younger millennials, and millennials just believe that they should, you know, I got a college degree and I've been here 6 months. So why am I not in the boardroom with the CEO helping make decisions? Because they're very egalitarian. Everything is equal. Everybody's equal. And the 59-year-old baby boomer is saying, what are you talking about? I started this company before you were born. Mm-hmm. So I made a deal with you. I'll pay you $42,000 a year and you show up and do what I tell you to 5 days a week. And it's just a huge difference of worldview and mentality. That's the first one. The second problem, I think, is that people tend to think that leadership and influence is technique. Tell me, and this is what I do in my seminars. I'll say, you know, people talk about the end that they want, and it can be anything. I want to get rich. Tell me what I need to do. I want to become, I want to make a lot of sales. Tell me what I need to do. I want to be a great leader. Tell me what I need to do. They focus on do. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, and Zig Ziglar was the first one, he had a little equation, and I use it a lot, is it's not tell me what I need to do to have what I want to have. It's be, do, have. That's the equation. Because who you are at a core level drives what you do, which will determine what you have. And so most people start at the wrong place. I'll give you an example from the financial world, and it's easy translatable into the leadership world. If you want to save money and make, you know, have investments and gain wealth over the course of a long period of time, you would say, tell me what I need to do. Well, here's what you need to do. You need to save $1,000 a month. Okay, cool. We make $150,000 a year, my husband and wife. Yeah, we can do that. But if you're greedy or you're materialistic and you're walking through the mall and you see that Louis Vuitton bag and it's $2,500, you buy the bag because you can't live without it. And so you have this difference, right? Tell me what I need to do. We all know what to do, but we're driven by who we are. And so that internal compass keeps you from achieving, whether it's weight loss would be another one. Anybody can lose weight. It's relatively simple. Eat right, exercise, you know, of course, visit your doctor and get on a plan and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And go to the gym, lift weights, get on the treadmill, you know, limit your calories, have a balanced diet. It's easy to know what to do. But when 5:30 rolls around and the alarm goes off and you go, and you just lay there, that's a be problem, not a do problem. You know what to do, mm-hmm. but who you are, that's the core. And a lot of it with leadership, right? You know, tell me what I need to do. I can give you top 10 things you need to do. But if you have an anger problem and you're short-tempered and somebody does something wrong and you yell and scream at them because you can't control your temper, that's a leadership problem, even though you know exactly what to do. So I think the problem is, to sort of summarize it, is people focus on the what to do's rather than the what to be's. Hmm.
Interesting. Now, when it comes to influence, Chris, I mean, how do you make that great first impression with people? You know, how do you, because first impressions are everything, you know that.
I think the first impression comes from being happy, kind, optimistic, and others oriented. So if you walk into a room and you're grumpy and you got a grimace on your face and you hide out in the corner, you're not going to have any influence. You're not going to be a leader. If you walk up to people with a smile on your face, look them in the eye and say, hey, I'm Chris, what's your name? And you stick your hand out and you give them a nice firm handshake. That's a good beginning because you're friendly. People do business with people they like. Mm-hmm. People follow people they like. And then being other-centered, you know, it's kind of funny. I was telling somebody this. Half of all of my royalties from one publisher, I have one publisher who's done a ton of my audio programs and a few of my books, not my big published books, but, you know, a lot of my self-published books, we partner on it. And half of all my royalties are from one book. And it's a book almost, and almost none of my friends or people that know me, even know that I did. But online and everything, and in iTunes and on Amazon, it's my bestseller in half my royalties. And it's called How to Talk to Anybody, Anytime, Anywhere. And that's the name of it. It's both an audio version as well as an ebook, How to Talk to Anybody, Anytime, Anywhere. And it's very simple. And that is ask questions, find a connection, go in that direction. Mm-hmm. So that's the three step. I just saved you $9. ask questions, find connections, and go in that direction. And so, you know, you want to create good rapport, ask questions until you, you know, first of all, they're going to just be interested in the fact that you're interested in them, rather than saying, hey, I'm Chris, let me tell you all about myself. I'm an author, I'm a speaker, I travel the world, blah, blah, blah. But what do you do? Oh, well, I'm an architect. Really? A commercial architect or homes? Well, commercial primarily, big buildings. Wow, that's fascinating. And then, so you're asking questions. Now I've found a connection, because where do you think I'm going to go with that? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with my dad. Oh, my dad was the fifth partner at NBB&J. And they're going to say, oh, wow, everybody knows NBB&J. And I said, yeah, it's really fascinating. Now we found a connection. Now we can start talking in that direction. And I'll say, how long have you been an architect? Where did you go to school? What's the coolest building you've ever developed? What kinds of things are you working on now? And they're just going to be enthralled with the fact that you're interested in them. Mm-hmm. And that creates rapport, and it creates loyalty, and it creates attraction. And now, if and when you have the chance to lead or influence, they're going to be wide open to it.
That's really it. I was writing this down as you were talking, Chris. So what motivates Chris Widener? What gets you up in the morning?
You want to know what's funny? Death motivates me. And people always find it so morbid. But the fact that I'm going to die someday, and I don't know when it's going to be. Because my dad died when he was 41. Young guy, making $90,000 a year in 1969.
Sure.
And I'll tell you a funny story. My brother's 13 years older than me. And on his 41st birthday, my mother, who was a piece of work, my mother was the greatest thing that ever happened to me and the worst thing that ever happened to me, till I met my beautiful fiance, Denise. She was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. So my mom calls my brother to wish him happy birthday. And she said, happy birthday, Glenn. And he said, oh, thanks a lot. He said, I got to be honest with you. I'm feeling a lot better today. The last year I've just felt really down. And my mom said, well, why? And he said, well, you know, it's kind of embarrassing to admit, but you know, with dad dying at 40, I spent the last year thinking I was going to die. And my mom, who couldn't keep her tongue to herself, says, Glenn, your dad wasn't 40 when he died. He was 41.
Got another year to
die at 41. So he spent 2 years scared to death he was going to die because our dad died at 41. I didn't suffer from that problem, but it was a reality, yeah. Right? People die. And, you know, kids that I went to high school with, a kid named Jeff Miltimore killed in an automobile accident. He was on a motorcycle, died in a motorcycle accident. Sixth grade. I can still remember the kid. His name was Chris Wood. And he was on a rope swing and fell off and died from impact. And, you know, just all sorts. All along, I was very noticeable. I guess that's the wrong word, but I was I'm very observant of the fact that life is short and tenuous, and you never know when it's going to end. Mm-hmm. And so I've been driven to make my mark and do everything I can. I have long said I want my epitaph, I guess it's called, to say, Chris Widener, he got shit done. Because that's what I want to do. I do my own podcast for speakers, and I was interviewing a guy today who's pretty well known, and he was lamenting the fact that that he hasn't gotten done something that he wanted to get done. I don't know what it was, a book or something like that. And he's like, Chris, the thing I admire about you is you just get stuff done. And I'm like, you're right, I do get stuff done. I have a friend of mine used to play in the NFL, quarterback in the NFL. And every time I'd release a book, he would take me out for coffee and go, oh, I got to get my book done. And yeah, you do. You want me to help you? No, I'll do it. I'm going to get my book done. Year and a half later, I'd release another book. I'd get a Facebook message. Hey, can I take you out for coffee? I really need to do my next book. And, you know, there's people who do and people who don't. And I just decided that I may as well just keep doing, because eventually you don't wake up.
Yeah.
Eventually you just stop waking up.
There's no redo.
There's no redo, right? You get one shot. And, you know, for those of you who believe in reincarnation and all that, I don't buy it, right? I'm not coming back as a rat or anything like that. So, but yeah, I mean, I just, I've always been compelled by the fact that I knew I was going to die.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's like you said, it's very compelling, and everybody's going to die. And the moral is to get out there and take action and go for your dreams.
Yeah, I mean, what was the guy's name that did the last lecture? Remember that guy, Randy something or other? He was a college professor, and he got pancreatic cancer, and he did the last lecture. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Oh, man, Google it, or YouTube it, whatever. Bing it for you Microsoft fans. I actually have a friend who was speaking for Microsoft, and he said something, and he could tell people didn't believe him. He said, no, it's true. Google it. And they went, I mean, bing it. But this guy did a thing called the last lecture, and he was a college professor, and he got pancreatic cancer, and he did a thing called the last lecture. And it was about basically, you're going to die. I'm dying. I'm not going to be here. This is my last lecture. The thing went viral, hundreds of millions of views. It became a book, the whole thing. And what was interesting was, you know, there are people right now, and I'm saying, you know, you're going to die. You are going to die. Tomorrow, you will be one day closer to never existing again. And they're driving down the road, you know, eating a burger, and they're not thinking about it. But for some reason, this guy tapped into what I believe we all know and we all agree on and we're all fearful of and we all are driven by. For some reason, in this time and place, this guy, with his speech, the last lecture, tapped into it, and it exploded. And it's like oil guys, you know, they drill and get nothing, drill and get nothing, drill and get nothing. And then they hit oil and it just pours and pours and pours. He tapped into that idea where he got people to realize that everybody's going to die. You may as well live, right now.
Yeah. Sound advice. Well,
in fact, I'm going to pull it up even as we speak, but I posted a thing the other day from Anthony Hopkins on Instagram. I'll pull it up here, but it was really interesting. It was Anthony Hopkins, and it was a quote of his, and I'm going to pull it up here real quick. And it was basically saying the same thing that here it is, Anthony Hopkins. None of us are getting out of here alive. So please stop treating yourself like an afterthought. Eat the delicious food, walk in the sunshine, jump in the ocean, say the truth that you're carrying in your heart like hidden treasure. Be silly, be kind, be weird. There's no time for anything else. And that's kind of me. I mean, I loved that. That's the kind of the philosophy I live by. I've always done. I've had a great life. If I died now at 53, I will have lived a great life. I've still got 30 years in me, though, because I'm getting married to a gorgeous woman next month, in less than 3 weeks. And so we've got a great back half of our life planned out together.
Well, Chris, congratulations on your upcoming wedding, sir. Good luck to both you and your gorgeous fiance. Is there any final words you would like to leave the listener today with, sir?
You know, I usually end up talking about leaving a legacy. People say, I want to leave a legacy. You know, what kind of legacy? Financial legacy, legacy of love, you know, whatever it might be, whatever you want to be your legacy. And the reality is that the only way to leave a legacy is to do it today, because it all adds up. If you want a family legacy, spend time with your family today. Don't put it off till tomorrow. If you want to leave a financial legacy, save and invest money today. Look, Stephen Covey, you know, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. One of them, begin with the end in mind. So begin with the end in mind. What do you want your life to look like at the end? And then do something every single day to get there. It's the only way to leave a legacy is to actually live it each and every day.
Love it. Chris, how can people find you, sir, if they want to reach out to you?
They can find me at chriswidener.com. If they are a speaker or interested in becoming involved in the speaking business, they can go to widneracademy.com. If they're looking for personal or business coaching, they can go to widenercoaching.com, or they can find me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, any of those kinds of online social media places.
Well, Chris Widener, thank you, sir, for stopping by. Again, congrats on your upcoming wedding. Much success to you. You've already successful. Much future success. And love to have you back on sometime in the future, sir.
Anytime you want me.
All righty, sir. You take care of yourself.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.